and his parents flip the fuck out. So he drops all that on me, and then finally we're cool and shit. And then you come over and plop down on the couch, and I'm just like, oh, what the fuck now, know what I mean? The thought gave Taylor a good laugh. Wow, I saw those two. They were hot. No shit. He showed me a couple of the pics they sent him. Nothing nude, but freaky. Her eyes went wide with interest. Did he share them? No, but I bet if I asked him, Drew suggested, reaching for his phone. As he did, it went off with the chorus of, pretty fly for a white guy. Oh, hey, speak of the devil. He chuckled. Drew flipped the phone open. Yo mama's so dumb, she... He fell silent as Jason barked at him. Then his face grew serious. What is it? Taylor asked.
Someone just grabbed Alex. Drew scowled. Maybe Lorelai too. Jason's following them.
Oh shit, Taylor gasped. Wait, did he see them? Were they all dressed in black? Jason heard her over the phone. Drew listened and told her.
Yeah, said they all looked like a costume party for emo kids.
They're probably vampires, Taylor thought aloud. Damn it.
Drew blinked. What?
We gotta get after him.
We're on it. Jason's following. We can't exactly call the cops for this. We're gonna call Wade and get him.
We'll call him on the way, Taylor said, already up and grabbing her jacket.
Wait, on the way? What, you're coming too?
Last I checked, you don't have a car. Lorelai smelled him the moment the heavy door opened. The unmistakable ashen scent awakened crushing fear and despair. She didn't look up at him. She didn't want to look up at him. Shadows of multiple people moved across the bare concrete floor. The short length of the chains connecting her wrists and neck to the floor prevented her from standing. A metal muzzle had been fastened around her head with heavy leather straps. Her black nightgown was tattered and torn, stained with dirt, ash, and a great deal of her own blood. Lorelai leaned over to sit with the side of one cut and bruised thigh against the floor. She would not kneel before Ball. Lights went on in the room, of nearly featureless concrete.
Well, isn't this a sight?
Mused a voice Lorelai had hoped to never hear again. A man's hand reached down to grab Lorelai's chin. It pulled up with strength that she could not effectively resist. She stared up into the smoky eyes and ashen breath of Ball and his current host body.
My people were advised to do everything possible to break her, short of maiming her,
explained a calm voice with an English accent.
What a lovely room, Lydia said in appreciation. It's positively medieval.
Other metal fixtures, embedded in the concrete, sat ready to anchor the chains of prisoners. But only one was in use besides Lorelai's. Near one wall sat a woman, similarly chained but lacking a muzzle. She wore faded jeans, hiking boots, and a flannel shirt. Her brown hair hung limply to her shoulders. The woman was perhaps pretty, but for the fact that she clearly hadn't been allowed to bathe for days.
Who is that? The succubus asked.
Local matter, Damien answered. It is the lady's business. She isn't to be harmed. If you require us to remove her, we shall.
No harm, Lydia mused. But no reason to keep her from seeing these unspeakable things.
It's not as if we have an abundance of rooms like this here in Washington,
Damien replied dryly.
When and if she is eventually released, it will be good for her to carry back to her family an impression of how we deal with our problems in the ladies' lands.
I see,
Lydia said. She smiled at the woman, who stared back at her balefully. The prisoner seemed to be perhaps in her mid-twenties,
and clearly so does she.
Ball ignored all of this. He reached out to stroke Lorelai's hair, which she resisted. The demon lord smiled.
Lydia told me you were in much worse shape than this, he said with feigned concern. Well, perhaps not in the immediate sense,
he corrected, glancing at the blood on his hand and smearing it lewdly on her nightgown.
But she said you had sustained far worse injuries than these. You've obviously been working, but not for Belial anymore.
Lorelai glared at him, but was unable to do much more. Her eyes then turned away.
How long has it been, Lorelai?
Ball asked.
1500 years, at least. A very long time since you were on your knees for me.
If I might be so bold, spoke up a new voice, how does a succubus leave the service of a mighty duke such as yourself?
You are bold, Lord Stefan,
Ball grinned, still looking at Lorelai.
I'll not bore you with the politics of the pit. But it was just that, politics. I traded Lorelai to end an annoying dispute with a demon lord. I'm sure he took his frustrations out on you, didn't he, my sweet?
Ball said to Lorelai, who still did not look at him.
Perhaps that's why you made such efforts here in the mortal realm. The better you did up here, the less reason to call you back to the pit to perform directly for your master. I'll be pleased to have you back in my service. That will allow Lydia to remain in the mortal realm. You can stay in my domain and keep me entertained.
Lorelai didn't bother to hide her disgust or her hate. She made no noise, but the change in her eyes was clear. She would sooner face the wrath of every angel in Jerusalem than serve Baal. A phone buzzed.
Yes?
Damien asked. He listened silently.
Excellent, thank you.
Then he turned to Baal.
Our people have Carlyle. They're on the way here with him. It should be roughly 20 minutes. One of Lord Stefan's associates and one of our best soldiers have remained to clean up any evidence.
You used to be better about hiding your emotions,
Ball said to Lorelai, as her eyes clamped shut.
Lord Stefan, please have your people enact the warding of these premises as soon as Carlyle arrives. How long will your specialist need?
Once Carlyle is here, an hour, perhaps two at the most.
Time enough to amuse yourself, Lydia.
My master is too kind, Lydia answered. Lord Blackthorn, when he arrives, could you have him put on the table there with those lovely restraints?
This would suit our needs as well,
Stefan added.
It will be arranged, madam, Lord Stefan.
Splendid, Lydia smiled. Thank you.
Have someone come down and clean Lorelai up, too,
Ball said.
I wouldn't want her to attend Lady Anastasia's party upstairs in such a state.
It will be done,
Blackthorn consented, stepping away to relay commands to guards near the door. As he did, Stefan and Lydia exchanged a meaningful glance.
Do your work well, she said softly, and we will settle the issue of whose celebration this is before Ball takes his leave. None will doubt who has his final favor.
Wow, who knew angels swear so much?
Molly mumbled. It was an attempt to break the silence between them, but it didn't get far. She flicked her eyes to Onyx, then back to the road. Finally, she put her hand on Onyx's leg.
It's okay, love.
I'm so sorry about all this, Onyx said softly, Her eyes were still turned out the passenger side window.
No, don't. We could have walked away and ignored it all if we wanted to. And we don't even know if that chick's story is gonna check out, right?
Doesn't make me feel like any less of a moron. Onyx shrugged. Doesn't make me feel any better for putting you at risk.
Onyx, if those assholes grabbed him, we're as loaded for bear tonight as we're ever gonna be. The Brotherhood's a problem we'll have to deal with sooner or later. Might as well do it when we've potentially got an angel and a freaking demon on our side. Potentially, she repeated. Or if she's lying, then we go back home and kick her lying, shape-changing ass.
I don't think she's lying, Onyx said. It's up here. Turn left. Three buildings up. There. I don't see anyone out there. Probably long gone already.
Molly nodded, parking a couple of houses away. Still ready with the contingency plans?
As if in answer, Onyx simply held out a snapdragon petal. Bullshit first, run like hell second, she repeated. Molly began murmuring the words of the spell as Onyx retrieved a petal for herself. As Molly finished, she said, Maybe I got paid forward for casting this last time.
Onyx, seriously, let's say Rachel's story is legit. He couldn't have known you're an honest-to-goddess witch. What was he going to tell you?
Onyx sighed, murmured the words, and put the petal under her tongue. I'll pry an explanation out of him when we see him, she grumbled as she got out of the car.
Molly followed. I'll hold him down for you.
The pair walked together toward Alex's townhouse building, with their eyes scanning their surroundings. They didn't get far before spotting trouble. Onyx enjoyed a particular talent for magical perception. She found malevolence and wariness here, lurking in the shadows of the building across from Alex's. The debris of the fighting earlier had all been cleared away, with Alex's window looking intact and normal. But the concealed presence of two figures nearby was a dead giveaway. Fortunately, they had their act ready to go.
Oh, motherfucker,
Onyx grunted with feigned frustration. She looked directly at the lurking pair. Did you guys already grab him?
Do I know you? Asked a female voice.
Probably not. We just got invited to the party yesterday, so to speak.
Onyx shrugged.
By whom?
That's a little sticky, Molly said. His name's Kenneth, and, well, his invitation was interesting. Kenneth was,
an arrogant little pig with no social skills, who deserves to have his ass handed to him on a regular basis, the woman offered.
Onyx and Molly both made a show of fighting down grins.
We were hoping the invitation was still open, even if things didn't go so well with the messenger, Onyx explained. Particularly if we could deliver the guy you're looking for.
There was a long moment of silence. What are your names?
I'm Molly. She's Onyx.
It wasn't worth lying about that. The Brotherhood had clearly done some homework on them. The woman stepped out of the shadows. She was perhaps in her mid-30s, dressed in a darkly toned pantsuit. Her ethnicity was entirely undeterminable. The necklace around her neck hung beneath her top, so it was impossible to see what sort of charm she wore on it.
You can call me Miss Black for now.
She turned her head to look over her shoulder at her companion.
This is Talon, she added with a note of dry humor.
I thought you people were supposed to be subtle.
The man in the darkness snapped quietly.
I thought yours were supposed to be frightening, yet seductive.
Miss Black shrugged. Failure on both counts, I suppose. She looked back to Molly and Onyx.
As it happens, there is a party of a more literal sort tonight. I'll be happy to introduce you to the Brotherhood, if you would like to attend. It may be a bit of an overwhelming night, but if you delay, you may feel that you missed out on something remarkable. I can guarantee your safety for the night, as long as you take no actions against the Brotherhood or our hosts.
Will this count as our formal induction?
Molly asked with just the right amount of reluctance. Heavens, no. This isn't a night for commitments on your part. However, I think it will be a good time to see how and why it's in your best interests to join us. As I said, I guarantee safe passage. She held up her hands, reciting something ancient in Greek. Onyx and Molly saw the telltale signs of magic at work, recognizing the invocation of spirits and fate. All the right words were there.
There's also the thing with Kenneth,
Molly pointed out. That can be hashed out. If the two of you acted in self-defense, Kenneth will have no real recourse. You could smooth it over with an exchange of favors or gifts, as is custom, Miss Black suggested. I'm told he was injured, but I have no trouble believing that it was a response to his utter lack of tact, rather than an intentional strike against the Brotherhood. Still interested?
We're game, Onyx said. She didn't need to look at Molly.
Are you sure of this?
Talon murmured audibly from behind Miss Black. The sorceress shrugged.
Nothing risked, nothing gained.
I'm not worried about the trouble any two witches might make tonight, given the power we have assembled. There couldn't be a safer time to give them this opportunity. She didn't do anything to conceal the statement from the pair of women before her.
We have room in our vehicle for you, Miss Black said. In fact, for security reasons, I must insist we drive together. Don't worry, you won't be searched or anything. The right to self-defense and to tend to one's own matters are at the core of the Brotherhood's creed.
She beckoned for the pair to follow. They did so, sharing a glance that said volumes. Of course, they didn't remotely trust this woman. Of course, Miss Black didn't trust them. And, of course, this was likely their only option other than naked violence. Molly got a good look at Talon as he appeared from the shadows to follow behind them. He was deathly pale, with slicked-back black hair and the black trench coat. From under the collar of his black silk shirt, Molly caught the gleam of chainmail. He also did a poor job of concealing the underarm holsters beneath the trench coat and the short sword on his belt reminiscent of ancient Rome. The vampire's hands were both decorated with claw rings.
Nice jewelry, Molly noted. Cool to see one of you guys who doesn't get everything from Goth and Go.
Talon opened his mouth to say something sharp and biting, but promptly closed it with a hint of embarrassment. He checked to make sure his $15 iron cross necklace wasn't showing.
Y'all can't carry us both, fool. I'm gut shot and bleeding out. Take Cracker Carlisle and go. I'm not gonna just leave you,
Darren protested. He tugged on the corporal's sleeve, only to have it slip away because of the blood. Will fell back against the thin tree trunk and jungle grass with a grunt.
Darren,
Will choked.
Charlie ain't waiting on a long goodbye. We didn't come back for Carlisle for nothing. I ain't letting them get me. Now drop the 60 in your ammo and fucking go, man. I've got this.
Fucking bigoted asshole doesn't deserve this,
Darren grumbled, but he quickly obeyed. He threw his last belt of ammunition for the M60 off of his shoulders. Then the machine gunner hauled the half-conscious soldier, lying in the bush next to him, to his feet.
Yeah, don't I know,
Will winced. He stuck a bundle of gauze over his wound and put his towel over it, hoping to staunch the flow of blood from his belly. He'd probably need to put something else in there for added pressure, something thick. Will peeked out from behind his cover to look down the slight slope of the valley. All he saw was bush. All he ever saw anymore was bush.
But the Viet Cong were still out there, surely, regrouping for a counterattack. It was only luck and a little misdirection that bought even this much time. Darren paused to grasp Will's shoulder.
If there was any way, brother.
I know. Don't mean nothing.
Will gasped at the pain in his belly.
Anyway, tell my mama I done my best, right?
I will.
Darren nodded. He heaved Carlyle up and hustled away.
Or better yet, tell his cracker wife and daughter.
Will shouted, then muttered.
Yeah, tell him you owe your ass to a darkie.
Will pulled up the M60, then laid the M16 next to it. If he could keep both of them going for just a little while, when the Kong made their next move, he could hopefully give the impression he wasn't alone. That had already worked once when he and Darren rushed back, guns blazing and grenades going everywhere in their ploy to rescue Carlyle. Maybe he could keep the gag going. None of this would have happened if Sergeant Hafner hadn't lost his cool, calling a full retreat without stopping for shit. The six-man team became too spread out, trying to keep up. Hafner vanished, Jimenez got wasted from behind, and everything went to hell. Long-range recon patrols used to be more together than this. Will couldn't dwell on that. He dug through his pack, through rations and his poncho, and other gear to find the spare Claymore mine. Along the way, the letter from Stephanie fell out. It was a waste of precious seconds, but he thumbed it open. It wasn't one she sent during his first tour. Instead, it was the one she'd sent just after his second tour began, angrily justifying her infidelity. He didn't understand why she bothered. It was dirt simple. He went off to war. She said she loved him and she'd wait for him. Said she needed him to send money because she couldn't find work. And then he came home after a year in the Nam to find her 4 months pregnant and engaged to what's-his-name. Why in the fuck was he humping that letter through the bush after a whole nother tour was beyond him? He'd meant to bring the one from his younger brother, who wouldn't have to go to Nam while Will was in country. Or at all now, since Will wouldn't be leaving. Will never would have re-upped for Nam if Stephanie hadn't been cheating on him, but at least something good came out of the whole mess.
Third tour, my ass,
Will hissed. Then he heard the snap off to his left. Will raised his M16 one-handed and started firing off rounds. He didn't care about aim. He just needed to make a ruckus and keep some heads down. Big Darren could haul ass through the bush. He'd make good time even while weighed down by that jackass redneck. Darren was cool, West Coast kid. Will liked him, particularly for a white boy. Maybe in his next life, Will would have to live on the West Coast. It'd be nice if a body could have another chance. He saw a head pop up and blew it away with the 60. He blew away everything around it, too. Every tree branch, every blade of grass, every nasty little bug. Will heard shrieks of pain. He poured it on. They flanked him, of course. They shot him twice, in the leg and the small of his back, causing him to jerk and crunch up, almost over. They'd want a prisoner. They dug taking prisoners. Will had hidden the detonator to the Claymore mine right under his backpack. They didn't see it in time. The three Viet Cong that came up on him and turned him over onto his back didn't see the Claymore where it was stuffed under his shirt either. Not until he set it off. Teasing fingers and an indulgent hand slid across his groin. His body would never take such wake-up calls for granted, but such treatment was now less of a surprise. It felt so good that it briefly distracted him from the burning feeling in his closed eyes. Awareness came with sensations of discomfort, cold, hard metal around his ankles and wrists, with his arms and legs stretched out. This was no bed. His eyes burned painfully, so much that his enjoyment at being groped was quickly disregarded. This was very wrong. His smile faded. Two hands grabbed his head to hold it still. Someone else pried his eyes open. A third person poured a cold, clear liquid into his eyes to take away most of the burning sensation. The hands pulled away, allowing him to turn his head and blink away the solution, the blurriness and the fading pain. The hand didn't leave his groin. Alex thrashed his head a bit to clear it. The last thing on his mind right now was sex. Lorelai was in danger. Rachel vanished. He had been attacked at his home. For all he knew, his mother had been there too, and now he was in a cold, dimly lit room, chained to a table. Regardless of how his flesh reacted to that hand at his groin, Alex didn't feel aroused. He felt afraid. Strange people stood around the table. A couple of them were very pale, specifically a man in an all-black suit and a woman in an elaborate black dress fit for a medieval queen. Alex saw other strange folk, too, like the dark cowboy and the man in robes with his hood drawn to hide his face. The only normal-looking person was a distinguished, well-groomed older man, also in a sharp suit, only his clothes had some color. A pentagram on a chain rested over his red power tie.
"Not complaining about me being on your dick now, are you?"
Lydia asked Alex with a venomous smile and feigned affection. She loomed over him, dressed in an elegant green gown. She gave him a lewd squeeze. Alex pulled against the restraints, but he could move only a couple of inches. The way his body reacted to Lydia filled him with revulsion.
"It would appear you were right, Lord Stefan,"
said a deep, relaxed voice.
"Lorelai here reacts to Lydia touching him just as you suspected."
Alex twisted to look to his right. He saw Lorelai muzzled and chained to the floor. Standing over her was Lydia's date from the restaurant, only different. He looked more imposing now. He wore a purple dress shirt and black slacks, but no tie or jacket. His eyes had gone black. Lorelai's eyes conveyed a swirl of emotions. The muzzle prevented her from giving voice to any of them.
"Your name is Alexander Carlyle," said the distinguished-looking man in the suit. "You are roughly a month short of your 20th birthday. You are a student at North Seattle Community College and a part-time file clerk for Keating and Rose. You live with your mother, Michelle Carlyle. You were rejected for military service. Need I go on?"
Alex remained silent. He glared at the speaker, in part to avoid looking at Lydia.
"Oh, I need not. You rightly fear for your mother's safety. However, she is not a part of this. I need you to focus instead on Lorelai and how the two of you came together."
He pulled a picture out of his pocket and showed it to him.
"Do you know this man?"
Alex wondered if he should answer. Instead, the choice was taken away from him.
"Ah, I see. You do not, at least not personally. But you fought with him the night you met Lorelai and..."
Stefan cut himself off. He fell silent, as if watching something unfold on a television.
"And you watched him die,"
Stefan finished.
"Lorelai killed him. His assistants died too. Everything burned."
The pit in Alex's stomach deepened. Stefan seemed to read things straight from his mind. He also realized that Stefan gave only an edited account.
"I was correct,"
Stefan said, looking from Lydia to Ball.
"Our exiled former brother pursued his research. He summoned up Lorelai in an attempt to enslave her. Carlyle stumbled upon him while pursuing some unrelated foolishness. He saw what he thought was a bizarre gang rape about to occur, and so he intervened. In the process, he was connected to the succubus. He is currently both her victim and her master."
"Curious,"
Ball replied.
"What else?"
Stefan frowned. He stared at Alex, who wondered why Stefan didn't mention Rachel. Stefan's eyebrows rose.
"I am unsure of the efficacy of our former brother's ritual, but I can confirm that Carlyle is not a practitioner, as we suspected. Examining the details of the incident through his recollection will require enchantment of his memory's accuracy and reach. Warren here is an expert in such things, he added, gesturing to the man in robes.
How good of you to share all of your suspicions with the rest of us, Lord Stefan,
murmured the pale woman in the regal dress.
Does our bargain hold, Lord Ball?
Asked Stefan.
It does,
said the man with the smoky eyes.
If Lydia feels it appropriate.
And ours?
Asked the other woman.
Lady Anastasia,
Lydia smiled, clearly enjoying her moment of glory.
I will happily fulfill all agreements when my business here is completed. Would you mind waiting for me upstairs? This will all likely become a bit visceral and crude.
Lady Anastasia stiffened, but gave a polite nod. She held out her hand for the man in the black suit. They walked out together with the cowboy in tow.
Warren? Asked Lord Stefan. What more do you need?
I have blood and hair and flesh,
the man in the robe said.
All I need now is a few tears.
I'd hate to make you wait,
Lydia shrugged. She promptly reached to Alex's face, forcing one eye open and then rubbing a finger over it. Alex tried to fight it, but she was too strong. The robed man held a vial against the side of his irritated eye until the tears flowed.
With this,
Warren said,
I will only need a short time and some privacy to complete my work. I will return immediately upon its completion.
Then let not another moment of my master's time be wasted,
Lydia shrugged.
I will keep our prisoners occupied until you are ready.
Lord Stefan,
said Ball,
might I speak with you upstairs?
Of course,
Stefan nodded. He pulled Warren aside, conferring with him in a language Alex didn't recognize and could barely hear anyway. They both turned to leave. Before he followed, Ball lingered to stare at Alex. The young man and Lorelei looked to one another with mutual concern.
You know,
Ball mused,
he looks oddly familiar.
I thought as much myself,
Lydia shrugged. She indulged herself in a slap across Alex's face, and then another, and then another. Her open hand didn't injure him, but it delivered more stinging pain than any punch Alex had suffered all week.
Still intent on killing him with kindness,
Ball smiled.
Later, master, Lydia smiled. That will wait until I haven't so many cats to herd. Lorelei deserves to feel him go. I would hate to rush it.
Rachel felt the first sensations of pleasure forced upon her lover. For a brief moment, it lifted her hopes. Then she felt the accompanying revulsion that replaced any feeling of enjoyment. The sensations continued while the revulsion grew. Revulsion and fear. She stood in the summoning circle, staring off into space and trying to control her worries. The sensations she received from Alex, sexy, hopeful, then the polar opposite of both, gave her all too good an idea of who had him. She couldn't see him, though. She saw only her surroundings, just pagan decor, yard sale shelving, and candles. Rachel tried to break through the summoning circle many times after Molly and Onyx left her there. The pair had done their job all too well. She was good and stuck here, until either their summoning ritual wore off, and heaven only knew how long that would be, or until they released the spell. He couldn't die like this, not now, not after so many lonely and painful lifetimes, not when that whole pattern seemed to have been broken. except it was entirely possible that this was just another tragic ending. Overwhelmed with fear for her new love, only so recently consummated in her heart as well as physically, Rachel sank to her knees. Even angels prayed. The suburban woods and hills northeast of Seattle, along the shores of Lake Washington, could conceal much. Urban development competed with natural scenery over the years as the city and its neighbors expanded. With enough money, connections, and planning, one could take advantage of the sorts of obstructing hillsides and thick tree lines that most locals took for granted. Not long after joining Miss Black and Talon in their dark SUV, Molly and Onyx felt that they were out in the middle of nowhere. They both knew that couldn't actually be the case, yet the tall, seemingly thick woods lining both sides of the empty road created an air of isolation. They finally turned off to a side road, where a pair of pale men in black trench coats and dark-toned clothes tended a tall, wrought-iron gate. Talon, behind the wheel, leaned out and said something in Russian. One guard walked a full circle around the vehicle, casually holding a rifle of some sort under his coat. The other waited until the circling guard gave a nod, then he opened the gate by hand. Up ahead, not entirely obstructed by trees and a rising landscape from the gate, waited a huge home, reminiscent of a southern plantation manor. Numerous cars sat parked in a small lot off to one side. The grounds were spacious, with the trees cleared away from the house for a good 50 yards in any direction. As the SUV rolled up to the manor, Ms. Black leaned out from the front seat.
"This is a highly unusual assemblage," she said. "We don't normally associate so openly with the, nightlife. Tonight's a special occasion, though. The Brotherhood has been invited here to establish peaceful ties with their society."
"Anyone else invited?" Molly asked. "We gonna get to meet our first werewolves?"
Talon hissed.
"Don't even joke about that."
Molly blinked.
"Wait, for real? I thought that was just a cheap movie gimmick. You guys really don't get along?"
"Few supernaturals get along with others as a general rule, but I wouldn't worry about them," Talon said.
He seemed to glance up at them through the mirror, but as he cast no reflection, they couldn't be sure.
"They have incentives to stay away. Still, do yourselves a favor and don't bring it up. It's the only advice I will give. That, and should you in any way violate the hospitality of the lady or our host, Lord Blackthorn, you will discover the sorts of torments one learns to inflict over the course of a few hundred years of practice."
Molly held back from telling Talon how frightening he wasn't. She had to be nice. Tact and deference were vital to their cover story. She and Onyx could only afford to show the bare minimum of contempt for vampires expected within the practicing community.
"Seems like a pretty random Monday night to have such a party," Onyx observed.
Talon pulled the SUV up to the front steps of the manor. Several men waited to open doors, take coats, and provide other simple assistance.
"It was short notice for all of us, but the ladies' invitations are not to be ignored," Talon said. "Much of the Puget Sound is here tonight, all who could possibly make it. The lady promises to explain all before the hour grows late."
Miss Black glanced at his back as he got out, then rolled her eyes for the benefit of her new associates.
"Pretentious douchebags, all of them," she muttered. "Not as powerful as pop culture would have us believe, but they are still very dangerous and numerous. Watch yourselves in there. The vampires don't want to piss us off, but many are letting their freak flags fly to intimidate us. Naturally, the Brotherhood doesn't feel like being cowed. You're bound to see some wild sights tonight. If anything appalls you, come talk to one of us before you do anything rash. This is a diplomatically sensitive event, Lord Stefan warned us that the precious Lady Anastasia has made some otherworldly allies as well. Live and let live is the rule tonight. With that, she exited.
I'm almost ready to cut our guest loose right now,
Molly murmured. This doesn't prove anything about her story, Onyx countered. They glanced at one another, silently agreeing not to speak of Rachel again. Instead, they both took a deep breath and got out of the SUV. The attendants bowed but made no approach. As they followed Miss Black up the steps, they shared another of their near-telepathic looks. They both felt the powerful sorceress ward over the building when they crossed it. It would surely block out any clairvoyance or other magical perception from outside. Within their own wards, the Brotherhood would hold a significant advantage of power in any sorceress conflict. Neither Molly nor Onyx expected they would be allowed to attune themselves to the ward. That sort of trust wouldn't be extended easily or quickly. The raw numbers here were more than enough of a deterrent to any trouble. But the ward redoubled the importance of subterfuge and guile as their only feasible tools here. If the ward fell, both Molly and Onyx would be able to employ much more power, but breaking it would require significant physical damage to a casting circle they couldn't even see, or to the building itself. Even then, there were still an awful lot of potential enemies present. As if they needed the reminder, they found Talon at the top of the steps, speaking with another pair of vampires.
I'm available to help, Lucian,
Talon offered, to a thuggish vampire in an all-black suit. With him was a pale blonde woman in black slacks, a black bustier, and a leather jacket. The other vampire gave a subtle, dismissive wave.
It's likely just college kids looking for a place to go party off in the woods. Natalia and I can handle it. We'll just add them to the party favors. The lady is honored that you have relocated here from the old world. Stay and enjoy yourself.
He laid a hand on Talon's shoulder, nodded, and then descended the steps with the blonde in tow. Onyx and Molly shared yet another pensive, curious glance, along with the same resultant frown. They could do little but press forward. Miss Black returned to the pair, bringing along a waiter with a tray of champagne glasses. She wasn't surprised when they turned down the drinks.
Can I show you around, then?
She offered.
Introduce you to a few people.
Inside, the lighting was predictably dim. Opulence reigned throughout the interior, with vaulted ceilings, handcrafted staircases, immaculate carpets, statues, and other artwork everywhere. It was much more a mansion than a house. Hushed conversations were heard from the corners. Pale figures in all manner of black, or at least darkly colored costumes, mingled together. Weapons were evident from a number of eras. Daggers, swords, even a few black powder pistols could be seen amid the fashion show.
Mr. Woods,
Miss Black called, beckoning to a dashing man in his mid-30s.
Do you have a moment to spare?
He graciously excused himself from his conversation with a markedly pale couple in Victorian dress to join the three women.
I want you to meet a pair of prospective new members. This is Onyx and Molly.
Ah,
Mr. Woods smiled, offering his hand.
It's a pleasure to meet you both. Particularly in a nice, sociable environment. We're all terribly sorry about the incident with Kenneth.
Onyx took his hand, but only warily.
News travels that fast?
I had to see his release from both the emergency room and police custody. He gave me a complete description of the two of you, though he forgot to mention how lovely you both are. He was more than a little irate, of course. But I can't say I have any sympathy for him. He knows he should be polite whenever he's recruiting.
Molly also shook hands with Mr. Woods.
Might want to get a different recruiter,
she suggested with a grin.
Oh, certainly, Mr. Woods agreed. Ultimately, Kenneth was well out of bounds in the whole matter. Regardless, you showed both skill and discretion in response.
We'd prefer to chalk it up to an impressive audition and an awkward misunderstanding rather than hostility. So, by way of saying bygones on behalf of the Brotherhood, welcome to the party.
Some party, Onyx noted, looking around meaningfully. As expected, Miss Black had understated the oddities of the party. Here and there wandered shapely young men and women, in little clothing, mostly either a pair of black silk shorts for the men or tiny strapless black dresses for the women. None of them looked particularly thin, yet they were not at all out of shape. The women wore their hair up, the men had theirs cut short. None of them spoke or even seemed to be entirely all there mentally. They lingered near the vampires, who would occasionally reach out to draw one of them close for a brief bite. Mostly they bit at the neck or the wrists, but a few of the vampires just had to be kinky about it and bit elsewhere. The seemingly mesmerized young man or woman would wait patiently, even with some degree of pleasure on his or her face, while the vampire took his or her fill. Then the well-groomed snacks moved on about the party. The Brotherhood would not be outdone. While their numbers were notably fewer, and while their styles generally held to business casual, with one or two robed exceptions, they seemed pointedly unfazed by the undead festivities. The sorcerers showed off in their own way, an impossibly glowing trinket here, a bit of telekinesis or illusory companionship there. A couple of them had small, almost feral red imps riding on their shoulders, who took full advantage of every hors d'oeuvre stray that wandered close enough for their lashing tails to reach.
Ah, yes, I'll go out on a limb and guess that this is your first social experience among supernaturals in any significant numbers, yes?
Mr. Woods mused. You could say that? Onyx nodded. His friendly smile never wavered.
Then I'll also hazard a guess that the both of you come by your youthful beauty legitimately rather than through magic.
I'm right here, Woods. Miss Black scowled playfully, giving his arm a slap. He's saying I got a cheap magic facelift and boob job.
I'm saying you got a remarkable magic facelift and boob job, among other things.
Mr. Woods bowed with equal joviality.
But back to my point, the nightlife have a penchant for reminding themselves how far removed they are from ordinary folk. They like to feel they're above conventional morality. Can't say I don't sympathize there. And so they go to great lengths to reinforce that premise when among their own. Depending on how adventurous you feel, you could find any number of much more licentious scenes behind the closed doors of this mansion. Some would gladly show you around, if you're interested in that sort of thing.
Molly frowned a bit. Inside, she suspected that she would be nothing short of appalled, but she had a cover to maintain. I think we'll take things a bit slow, thanks. We're still hoping to get to know the rest of our fellow practitioners better.
Of course, Woods shrugged. I'm just saying, bring together a gathering of people with power and knowledge beyond ordinary mortals, add in the thrills of a secret society, then provide demonstrable proof that they're all above the law, and the result will be...
He gestured grandly with his open hand and with the one holding his champagne glass.
Us.
His smile broadened.
I am therefore reluctant to pass judgment on our hosts.
I find it all a bit gross, to be honest, Miss Black confessed in a conspiratorial tone. There are a couple of men here I've met before from my other social functions. I used to think they were charming and attractive, but now that I know what I'm looking at, ugh.
And there it is, ladies,
Woods said as if drawing a lesson to its conclusion.
The vaunted charm and sexual allure of the undead crumbles once you see past the facade. You either see a dark, sensual, mysterious, yet entirely human lady or gentleman,
Or you see a well-preserved corpse, but still a corpse. At that point, they're like any other predator. Recognize it for what it is, and you are already less attractive as prey. Their physical prowess isn't to be taken lightly, nor the wealth of experience that many of them have attained. They're inhumanly dangerous, but in the end, they don't hunt for wary meals that might put up a real struggle. They look for the easy bite. Survival is the top priority, far above pride or the need for a challenge. He downed the last of his champagne and placed it on a passing waiter's tray. Then Woods reached out to take Molly and Onyx, both by the hand with practiced grace. But enough about them. Let's talk about us. Onyx tilted her head warily. What was that you said about recognizing a predator? Woods pursed his lips with amusement. Yet I'm alive and healthy, so my predatory nature shouldn't make me any less charming. Molly and Onyx shared a smile and a knowing glance. Mr. Woods was indeed charming and witty and handsome, and they would both have paid good money to see him hit by a bus.
They looked kinda like the wannabe goth version of the village people,
Jason explained. He and the others stood between his car, Taylor's, and Wade's pickup truck in the parking lot of a gas station. To one side lay the road. To the other three sides of the station rose tall evergreens. It was just cold enough to see one another's breath.
I mean, there was gothy gangster dude with his Tommy gun, and there was goth cowboy, and there was goth, I don't know, he had a long sword on his back. Goth SCA guy, maybe?
I thought you said they were emo-looking, Drew said.
Goth ain't emo. Goths have self-respect.
Look, I was a little too freaked out for nuanced labels right then.
Wade and Drew both frowned skeptically, but Taylor didn't. All Lorelai said was that you can usually spot them because they're all pale, and they tend to dress with some holdovers of their old time frames from when they were human. She put in, so maybe the gangster guy was turned into a vampire in the 1920s or something. The one at the party half looked like he should have been at a Renaissance fair, and he had that crappy wannabe English accent.
Seems like a kinda thin basis for profiling,
Wade frowned.
You know, if I found out that vampires are real, I wouldn't be telling my friends about it two nights later,
Jason had to say.
I'd be telling people within, like, 5 minutes.
Oh, 'cause you were so quick to tell me Lorelai's a demon, right? Taylor snapped back. And anyway, I've been busy, okay?
Wade's frown didn't go away.
Doing what?
Taylor quickly fell silent, crossing her arms over her chest. She looked sharply at Drew and Jason, who both glanced away awkwardly.
Look, she said, can we stay on topic? This is serious. Do you really think that Lorelai's the type to go for kidnap roleplay with goofy costumers?
Hey, I ain't about to try to figure out what kind of freaky shit turns her on.
Wade shrugged.
But I ain't saying this ain't trouble. I drove by that estate myself, and I'm pretty sure I saw dudes trying to hide their guns under their coats. I mean, even if that's some rich dude's house and he's just got bodyguards, they wouldn't be out at the gate wearing black trench coats in the middle of the night. Pretty sure that longsword I saw was for real, anyway.
Jason shrugged.
You go to enough conventions, you get to know the difference.
He glanced around at the three sets of eyes that stared back at him.
What? Whatever. They got our boy and we gotta get him back, Drew said. Ain't like we aren't all on the same page there. Did Lorelai say how to fight vampires, like, do bullets work?
Taylor shrugged.
We only talked about it briefly in the car this morning. All she said was that they're vulnerable to fire and that they aren't much of a threat to her. Said they're tough and scary compared to normal people, but nothing she can't handle. She took out the one at the party so he wouldn't eat anyone there that night.
But y'all don't know if they really hypnotize people or whatever?
Wade asked.
Not if you can see them coming, I guess. The one at the party looked at me trying to be all flirty, but, well, Lorelai warned me that he was trouble, so I just thought he was gross.
Drew and Wade both turned to Jason. He took a deep breath.
Sunlight, holy water, fire. Bullets probably won't hurt them a lot. If they're partly dead, they don't need their organs to work, you know? A stake through the heart is supposed to either kill or immobilize, depending on the legend or the fantasy derivative. Sometimes silver is supposed to work, sometimes it's not.
Thought silver was for werewolves, Drew asked.
Look, this shit's all supposed to be fantasy in the first place,
Jason shrugged.
There's all kind of folk legends and stuff, and who knows which culture is more accurate than another, or if there are lots of different kinds. And you've got 100 asshole authors trying to cash in on a vampire fad right now. Every freak writing smut on the internet uses vampires, for God's sake. The whole thing should have died out 10 years ago, when the hot goth chicks stopped showing up at the vampire LARPs.
Y'all were there for them good old days, were ya?
Wade quipped.
I heard about them, anyway, Jason muttered. Point being, the legends are all diluted. Who knows what's actually legit and what isn't? If Lorelai said fire's good, then I'd go with fire. Not like we can get our hands on holy water at this time of night, anyway.
Rachel is supposed to have a big flaming sword, noted Drew. Where the hell's she in all this mess?
Well, either vampires screw up her clairvoyance like demons do,
Jason reasoned,
or there's something else going on, and it's not like she's got a phone number.
As he spoke, they heard a clack from the doors of the gas station's mini-mart. Drew looked over to see the attendant lock the doors and look at the four of them with obvious wariness. He also pointedly turned away when he noticed Drew looking back. Drew checked his watch and frowned. It seemed a bit early to close down given the posted hours. It was late, but not that late.
No, but if both Alex and Lorelai are in that house, we need her kind of help, Wade said. We gotta figure out how to get her attention.
A black SUV pulled up to one of the pumps. Drew nudged Wade, who nodded.
Attendant's gone twitchy, too,
Drew murmured.
Wish we could just call the cops,
Taylor frowned. She kept her voice low since Drew had obviously quieted down. It made her nervous.
Yeah, but with what we've already seen, we can't be sure they aren't paid for already.
Jason shrugged. A man and a woman stepped out of the SUV. They were well-dressed, all in black, and looking a little pale. The woman's clothes showed off her figure. The man wore a well-tailored suit. He walked with her to the door of the mini-mart. Wade threw down his cigarette butt and crushed it out.
I just wish it wasn't so late already,
he grumbled.
Liquor stores are all going to be closed by now.
Liquor stores?
Drew blinked. He watched as the couple tried the mini-mart's doors.
Yeah,
Wade nodded.
You'd think the one place that'd be open late at night would be where you'd go to buy booze.
The couple approached.
Hi, excuse me,
the man said with a smile. His smile didn't quite reach his eyes.
You wouldn't happen to have any cigarettes, would you? We're out and that stupid market's closed.
I'm dying for a smoke,
the blonde complained with a winning smile.
Yeah, gotcha.
Wade nodded. He patted his pockets.
Think I got a spare pack in my glove box. Come on, I'll hook y'all up.
Wade turned, fishing his keys out of his pocket.
You're a lifesaver, handsome,
the woman said. She followed close behind Wade to the passenger side of Wade's pickup. The man cocked his head curiously.
Did I hear you say you're looking for drinks?
He asked.
You know, we're on a way to a party ourselves.
You don't say, Drew shrugged.
Good night for that. Partying. Jason nodded. I can't stand having no party to go to on, Monday night.
He finished lamely.